The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show here in Highland Radio. It is 9:05 just now on this Friday, the 10th of April, 2026. We do hope you're very well indeed. Thank you very much for choosing the show. We're here with you, as I mentioned, until 11. We've got so much to pack in. We want you involved in the conversation, though, throughout our Friday panel. I'll introduce them to you in a moment. But just to remind you how you get involved in the conversation, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. You can also call us, of course, on 07491 25,000, or email the show comments@highlandradio.com. If you want to watch the program as well, go on to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on your mobile devices, your smart TV, your Fire Stick, whatever device you have. And we're across Facebook and on the X platform. Right, let's get to our panel. Good morning to you, 100% Redress Party TD, Deputy Charles Ward. Good to have you on the show. Good to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Morning, Greg, and morning to all the listeners.
Yes, indeed. Rebecca McDade is a chairperson, or is the chairperson, of Ain't Two in Donegal. Good morning, Rebecca. Good morning to you, and you might unmute just when we get to the round of questions.
I forgot to do that.
That's okay. It's all right. Paddy Rooney, Chair of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Good morning to you, Paddy.
Hi, good morning, everybody. How are you?
Good, good, good. I might stay with you, Paddy, seeing as you're up on my screen. You know, we cover a lot of topics on this programme, but few have caught the imagination like the fuel protests. So with the army now being called in to potentially break up fuel blockades and forecourts facing shortages, the question is to you, Paddy, has the government's refusal to talk to protesters up until today turned this price crisis into a national emergency in this high-stakes standoff? Who do you think will blink first? Do the truckers and farmers and others who say they can't afford to live? Or is it the government that says it cannot be dictated to by these protesters? We'll know perhaps later on. But what do you think?
Well, I'll tell you one thing anyway, Greg. We've learned during the last few weeks, if we haven't known this already, that the world has actually become a very small place as a result of two things. The American Artemis rocket that was sent to the moon a few weeks ago, when it went to the far side of the moon, it was the first time in mankind that that happened. And the second thing is that a situation where one man had a crazy idea on the far side of the world in Washington, and he decided to put that idea into action. And the four of us now are being directly impacted, and all of the people that are listening and watching your program are being impacted by this too. I've seen some comments in the paper this morning, by the way, from business and industry leaders in Ireland, that they're actually critical of the government, that they weren't able to see this coming and they weren't able to head it off. I don't know, did they have any advance intel that this was going to happen? But the most extraordinary thing, you know, if the regular groups like the Irish Farmers Association and the Irish Hauliers Association aren't directly involved in this, I'm at a loss to know how was this so well coordinated, because not alone the volume of people that are involved, but also the critical points like the oil refinery in Cork, and the docks and ports where all the oil is
being
burned.
Can I propose? I think, you know, the Irish Haulage Association is going to represent a lot of the bigger boys. There's, you know, there's guys and girls with one or two trucks, maybe they deliver coal, whatever it might be. In terms of the IFA, you know, you could argue maybe the IFA membership might not be quite as severely impacted. You know, some people feel that maybe it's the bigger boys the IFA represent, not the grassroots, you know, those that are involved with the Hill Farmers Association, etc. And that maybe the Irish Hauliers Association, the IFA, maybe they're so close to government that they might sort of say, you know, we're going to do this protest. And this is real organic grassroots, real protest.
It is, but there's some amount of coordination, Greg, in trying to get that all pulled together. And I've seen that Kevin Sheehan has a piece in The Independent today where he said that the government is trying to be very careful with this because they have a social partnership relationship with the Irish Farmers Association, the Irish Hauliers, and all such groups. And they don't want to break down relationships with them groups by talking to the people that are out on the ground. However, Jim O'Callaghan said on the news in RTÉ yesterday evening that it's such a disparate group. There's multiple voices on one site, on one location, and then you have multiple locations around the country. So if you wanted to talk to these groups, their difficulty is, well, who would you talk to? Because whether they're putting forward that as a real message, or they're just putting it forward to play things down, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we're going to learn about this now very, very quickly, and I was on your programme a few years ago when the Ryan Tuberty issue broke out on RTE, and I said to you about, we're going to find out a lot about Catherine Martin, who was the government minister for communications at the time. One of the arguments that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael put forward, Greg, at election time is that they're the only two parties that can really govern in the country and they can provide strong, stable government. Well, we're about to find out that now over the next few days, because I hear Micheál Martin used the word hope, that he was going to hope that the blockade would dissipate over the weekend. Well, we'd like to rely a lot more on hope, because Monday, all of the schools in the country are going to open on Monday, and there's going to be a lot of extra traffic on the road. And let's see how it plays out Tuesday and Wednesday of next week if parents can't get their children to school and there's no fuel. We're going to find out a lot about the government, Greg, whether they're able to provide strong leadership or not.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think you could argue that this talks to a lack of understanding from government, in that if you get regular people all over the country so moved by this that they will get involved, they don't have a leader. They're a group of individuals that have taken to the streets with a common interest and a common complaint. I'll come back to you because we've an awful lot more to talk about in relation to this. ANCDU Chair in Donegal, Rebecca McDade.
Morning, Greg. Morning, everybody. Yeah, I think it's the people power. Here we go again. The people are sick and tired of being ignored and they're not being listened to. And when you have that type of a situation, it's the people power that standing up and speaking out is, I think, what's going to prevail at the end of the day. I think the government has got to see common sense. They have got to be able to speak to the people that are in Dublin. It's not just the Irish hauliers and the certain few that they choose to talk to, but they've got to talk to those who have organised the protests in Dublin as well.
Yeah, but who are they, though? You see, we don't know who they are, per se. I don't think there is any...
Oh, they put themselves forward.
Yes, but I don't think...
They put themselves forward, so...
I don't think there's any individual... Yeah, but I don't believe there's any individual that you could say represents the people that are blocking the M50 or the people that are blocking the ports as such. It's someone who owns a Facebook group. That's the thing.
Well, there's two men has put themselves forward and they are the spokespeople for the protest. So they've made themselves very clear and they've made themselves known. And if they are talked to, if they are approached, they know that they will be able to make a phone call and everything will settle
down.
Of
course not. But just in relation to that, do you believe there are two people that, if they come out of a meeting with the government and said, right, they've committed to review this in the next week, we're calling this off, that the streets would clear? I don't believe there's that level of control of it. And that's not a negative thing, but I don't think people are going
to
stop.
I think, to be honest, Greg, that there has to be, there is leeway there. And I think that the people understand that if the people who are at the top, who are willing to negotiate with the government and willing to speak to the government on their behalf, provided that the government's willing to speak to them, if they get the word that they're going to have the conversation, and if they put the word out and say that, look, we can retreat, we can go back home again.
But what's the win, Rebecca?
People will listen.
I don't know. I don't agree. But anyway, what's the win, though?
The win is that the people get to be heard. That's what they want. The people want to be heard.
Yeah, but we need
and
to be able
as
to
my
fill
own
up our...
colleague has mentioned before, yeah. Mary T says, well, the government wants your vote, but they don't want your voice.
Yes, but my point
is... people must speak, and they have to speak loudly.
I was speaking to a carer yesterday who takes home less than 300 quid a week, working huge hours. You know, her fuel bills increased by 200 per month. You know, being listened to is not going to fill the tank. My point is what is the resolution? What does the government need to do, in your view, to satisfy the anger and to get people to cease this protest?
Well, it's very simple. They've got to speak to the people. They've got to speak to the people who are standing out there protesting. There's enough of them up there. But the two men that I have seen if they are spoken to and the message gets through and they're willing to negotiate, that's all it's going to take. But they have got, they can't ignore the people. Yeah. They can't ignore the people anymore.
Deputy Charles Ward, what I'm seeing, I'm not really hearing any conversation with a view to resolving this. What I'm actually hearing is a battle for the public relations, if the truth be told, in terms of trying to control the narrative of what is going on in this country. But what's your view?
Well, John Garrity would be one of the people who were rolled out on TV for the protesters. And basically, they had a meeting in Portlaoise, and within the confines of this meeting, there were names put forward, and John was one of them. Mr. Garrity went on Virgin One 2 nights ago on The Tonight Show, and you could see by the tone in the room that there's it's how dare you come here and inconvenience us, you know. And I just found it very poor journalism, to tell you the truth. And then yesterday on Prime Time, where he's on Prime Time again, and he's basically saying that, look, the people are speaking here. But then you have a minister, Timmy Dooley, who is sitting less than 6 feet away going, I'm not aware of anybody going at separated interview. And you could just tell this is a PR stunt, that there's a separation going on here, and that they will go into these meetings today with the IFA, the Irish Farmers Association, and the Road Haulers Association, because these organisations are for the lorry drivers and the farmers who are at the top end of the scale. But there's been the people underneath, the contractors who are servicing these industries, who have been left behind.
Like, what and about, the, what about who speaks for forward. Who speaks for the inshore fishermen? Who speaks for the carers? Who speaks for the taxi drivers? Who speaks for the school bus drivers? I could list. Go ahead.
I understand this. I totally understand this. But this is an organic movement that has sprung from frustration. And this will, there'll be more to come if they keep on going the way they're going, because our carers are at the pin of their collars, our fishermen, especially in Donegal, our industry's been destroyed. And what they do is they strip us of everything, and then they give you a little bit back and say, be thankful for it. It's not good enough.
What do you think the government will do? Do you think they will make any concession on the amount of tax, or in fact maybe use some of the rainy day fund, the 1.5 billion that they've put away so far this year, which if spread over every litre of fuel sold over 2026 would see a 33 cent reduction per litre at the very lowest amount. You know, that 1.6 has already been put away for 2041, right? So will they use that and see a proper reduction in every litre of fuel that's sold?
If you look at it from a political point of view, the government now, have the way they've handled this and the way they've treated these protesters and the way they've weaponized it, basically threatening them with the army, this is a damage limitation for them now. So no matter what they come forward with, there's a certain element where they're going to be weakened, and they know this. They've handled this horrendously, and now they're basically, if they do not do the right thing by the people, this will continue, and then you're going to see absolute chaos prevail over the next few weeks if they keep on going the way they're going. And it's about saying you've made a mistake and acknowledging the mistake, but the government won't do that because there is an arrogance in there that can be seen. And the way that these protesters have been treated, they're not criminals. They have the right to protest, and threatening them with the army, it says it all. I was absolutely disgusted yesterday when I seen this.
There's something else going on as well that people may observe. I'm not necessarily saying it's the case, but you'll see very senior government ministers now trying to suggest that it's nefarious people that are organising these events, that it's far right or it's anti-COVID or it's this, that and thon. And the idea is that you then sort of get regular folk, in inverted commas, dispersing because they don't necessarily want to be associated or what have you. And that's what I'm talking about, the PR battle. There's a lot of that going on surreptitiously, and some of it not so surreptitiously.
The Irish people again, Greg, it's very, very unfair. They're trying to put a muzzle on the Irish people and not allow them to speak. And that is not good enough.
Paddy, how
the
do
people
sorry,
have to be heard?
Yeah,
they are entitled to their opinion, and they have got to be heard. And we are the people who vote for those in government. And like Charlie, you'll know yourself, when the people power get up, and when people's backs are against the wall, they will come and they will speak out.
But we've got to realise something. As people, especially people from Donegal, there is a divide and conquer that is always put out there. And particularly with this, with what's going on now, there's the Irish Road Hauliers Association. They cannot just go, "I'm all right, Jack," and leave everybody else behind. They have members who are struggling and who need help. And today, now, when they go in for negotiations, I hope Mr. Garrity is part of that group that goes in at 1:30, because it goes to show you what can be done and what needs to be done going forward. We cannot allow situations like this to happen. There has to be clear dialogue. And you could see it yesterday. There were certain backbenchers within Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael that were on social media that were going through protests that were getting heckled, and they were trying to explain the situation. And you could see the pressure was building. And this is the way it has to be going forward.
Okay. Megan commented on YouTube, "It's not far right. How can you say that? I never said that." And it's just to clarify, what I'm saying is that there is a battle for the public mind going on, and there have been some suggestions from some people in government that it is the far right, in inverted commas, a phrase I generally don't use, that could be pulling the strings, and the idea being then it makes it all feel a little bit murky. I'm not saying that's the case, but trust me, I understand the media and I understand what's going on. Paddy, already there are protests being organised, because the one thing I'll say about this protest, it is very well organised, and they do understand that there could be this sense that it will die down after the weekend, and there is another nationwide protest already being scheduled for early next week. So how do we have anything in history that we can lean on? How does this get resolved?
Well, it will be resolved, I suppose. It will be resolved for sure sometime, and I'd say they're going to be resolved by dialogue, or else it's going to be resolved. It'll get bent out of shape like the miners' strike in England way back in 1981 or whatever. And, you know, there's confrontation between the Gardaí and the army and the people that are involved here. So let's hope it doesn't go to that place at all. Charles used the word organic there, and he's particularly right, because I've seen in some of the papers there's a comparison between the movement here that sprung up out of the ground uncoordinated with the Yellow Hats movement in France a few years ago, that were organised around the same thing. And the other thing I want to pick on too, Charles, that he's 100% correct, because Fran McNulty had
Can I just put, because
night,
I want you to continue on, but you made a very interesting point when you referred about the Yellow Hats. Do you know what made that Yellow Hat protest go away? The far right, in inverted commas, was linked to it. And it became all of a sudden, instead of a grassroots movement, it the impression was given that it was a very sort of a militant-y kind of movement.
Nice.
I just thought it quite interesting that you mentioned the Yellow Hats, and that was the beginning of the end of the Yellow Hats. But continue your point, Paul.
Okay, all right. No, that's fair enough. But because I see this comparison, and I read it somewhere in the papers this morning about the comparisons between the two. But Charles is also right, because Fran McNulty had a very, very aggressive interview. I don't know, was it John Garrity? Was he James Gagan? One or the other. But he was very, very aggressive with them. He didn't deal with any of the substantive issues at all, or asked him about the impact of the agricultural contractors or smaller hauliers or whatever. It was all about who gave you the rights and who elected you and all of this kind of stuff. And Timmy Dooley was getting very, very tetchy and getting very cross indeed when Fran McNulty was asking him about why could some of the people, the spokespeople for the people that were involved in the blockade, why could they not be taken to the meetings today? So this is tricky stuff anyway, because the easy thing to do this is to do, I suppose, is to put a cap on the price of agricultural fuel and to reduce the VAT and do all of these kind of things. But remember that somewhere over the hills there, the Fiscal Advisory Council are screaming off their heads about the fact that the government are spending too much money on revenue anyway. There is other people screaming for cost of living measures around the fact the cost of electricity. Have a look at your last electricity bill, Greg, to see the kind of shape of it is. We've had a whole load of teachers, nurses, Gardaí have had the conferences over the weekend. They're looking for all this, that, and the other. So the demands being placed on government is the most extraordinary thing.
But I do understand what you're saying, Paddy, and we'll get to the bottom. There's some of this stuff that's always there. I mean, obviously, we're all finding our money going a less distance. Teachers will use their Easter conferences to call for that. The price of electricity, I know we would love to see more done. I think a lot of people would like to say, see, you know, maybe these companies take less profit and make things a little bit fairer in that regard. The fuel for me is a little bit more urgent because it's right now. Again, the carrier I spoke to yesterday, they're sitting in the house with an empty oil tank because they simply can't fill the tank. And I think this is why this stands out a little bit, because it's now, it's urgent. It's literally people aren't able to do something today to continue with their work or their way of life.
Oh, absolutely, because today is Friday, and I see a lot of pubs, particularly in Dublin as well, they're on the verge of running out of beer, and that's an important thing for the weekend as well. And if this exacerbates the weekend and begins to galvanise and get greater in the middle of next week, things will become worse because people will run out of fuel and a lot of services won't be able to function. It's very, very difficult here, but I think that can I just pick up a point as well about the far right? I mean, Jim O'Callaghan on three separate occasions now, once on Virgin, one on the radio and one on RT News last night, mentioned the far right. And he mentioned one when he was challenged on it. He could only mention one tweet by the agitator in GB, Tommy Robinson, who retweeted something else that somebody else had said. And that's the only one.
99.9%, I would say, of the protesters aren't even on X. And I think that's why that's really...
Because the ad hoc people that the reporters are talking to on the line are coming across as honest to goodness regular farmers and truck drivers, and all they're interested in is the preservation of their own business. There was one big burly man, just finished this point, big strong man, and he was reduced to tears actually about that. In fact, he had his trucks and transport on the road, and he wasn't actually able to pay any of the bills for a straightforward and that. So I haven't seen anybody would say, for instance, if you go back to the rioting in Clondalkin and Dublin, you could say over the situation, the location of an iPass centre, you could see that there were people from the outside coming in to inflame that. There's very little evidence. I haven't been in the middle of
You can be left, right and middle, but still affected by this. Listen,
Absolutely. The
Irish public are incredibly, incredibly intelligent. And if there's 20 guys and girls standing there, and then there's one fella or girl who, you know, maybe monetarises their stuff on social media and is sort of hooking the trailer to it, you would put it like that. They're not stupid. They know. Everyone knows. They know. Yeah. You can tell the difference between those that are trying to drive traffic for their socials and those that are trying to put food on the table. It's not complicated, I don't think. Right, I want to put it to you, Rebecca, and I think maybe Charles and Paddy, of course, will have an insight into this. I mean, obviously, a lot of the decisions are made in Dublin. A lot of the national media that people sit and watch is produced in Dublin. Dublin is a part of the world where there are multiple options to do things. You know, Lewis's, buses, cycling, all that type of stuff. Do you think there is a, and this sounds like a loaded question, but I don't mean it to be. Do you think there is a real Dublin bubble there where they don't fully understand what life is really like in the majority in terms of landmass of Ireland? And I'm on about the politicians and those that cover the politicians that play five-a-side with them on Wednesday nights, etc.
Well, Greg, I'm smiling because I see Charlie there. I'm sure Charlie could answer that one very well. We have always known about the divide. And yes, there certainly is a massive divide. I suppose I have always talked about them insulting the people of Donegal because they just think that we don't exist. And it is extremely important that the people from Donegal speak up and have their voices heard all the time. And I will always say that, and I will always back that, and I'll never stop chirping about that either. Like to think about some of the comments that was made that we have heard, Patrick, you talked about Timmy Dooley there. And he talked about the people that were protesting that they didn't have a mandate. I mean, that is an insult beyond an insult. We have over 30,000 NGOs in Ireland. They don't have a mandate and they are funded by the government. The people who are up there in Dublin who are protesting are the people who are at the back end of this. In actual fact, they're at the front line because they are paying out on all of the revenue that the government is actually getting on the back of this, which is 60 to 65% of every litre of oil and diesel and petrol that's bought. Mm. So the government is, they're gaining big time from what we are paying. Every single one of us all over the country, regardless of where they're
it's
from.
It's all our money, but I
and
take,
one
I take
comment
your point,
I'd like to make, Australia has actually reduced their fuel by half. I saw that in a family over there. We have about six of them over there. So their government is willing to help their people. Our government, Greg, are not willing to help our people.
Okay.
They don't. They want to dictate to us. They do not want to talk with us. But they do want your vote. And when it comes to the time to vote, the people have got to vote with their feet, with their head and with their heart.
Stay right away.
How much longer are they going to be allowed to insult us?
All right, stay away while there. I want to, before I take in the rest of the panel, to go to Mark Hegarty. Mark was one of the people who organised last night's Go Slow from Bridge End to the Manor Roundabout. I've been sent pictures of posters made by young people, regular people, and saw the videos of the amount of people involved in it. Mark, I mean, obviously, explain why you organised this and also your reaction to the turnout.
How's it going, Greg? Well, first of all, I wasn't the person that came up with this idea or started organising it. Lyle's Argue Contractors and Mavala was the boys that came up with it. I just jumped on board, gave them a call to see could I help in any way at all, you know. And I says, is there anything I can do? And I went on social media and says, put it out there for people to, you know, try and turn up and try and turn out and support. Me and Joey Lyle talked and we says, look, we can't all make it to Dublin to support the boys in Dublin, but let's try and do something here to show our support. And when the government turned their backs on the Irish people, that really put fire into our bellies. And we says, let's stand up and be counted here. And that's where it started.
A huge turnout.
Oh, that was mind-blowing. Like, we never expected this. When I chatted to Joey first, we says, look, if we get a few tractors and a few lorries, sure, you know, it might gather momentum for another day, you know. But it was supposed to start at 7 o'clock from Bridge End to Manor, but we had to start moving vehicles at 6:45 because the whole place was blocked. Mm. Everywhere was blocked. We thought an hour and a half, we'll be up and down the road. It took almost 4 hours to get from Bridge End Roundabout. Now, we did go up the dual carriageway to try and get some traffic away and stuff and try and alleviate the traffic, but this was unbelievable, the amount of people turned out. But
Mark, do you think, Mark, like, you know, no harm to the Irish Hauliers Association, the IFA, who might be going into these meetings today, like, If they come out and say, right, the government's agreed maybe to look at this again next week and, you know, we've got this ceasefire and maybe prices will be coming down and blah, 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 blah. Do you think that would be enough to quell this ground-up movement? Do you think it would stop the protests?
I'm not sure if it'll stop it completely, Greg, but it will give people a wee bit of hope. Now, when you're government leaders and stuff turns their back on the Irish people, that's whenever it's going to get out of hand. They need to get a grip on the thing now and say, look, we're willing to meet this. We're willing to talk. Like, we need this country moving as well as everybody else. You know what I mean? It's just not acceptable. Like, you can't turn around and tell your own Irish people that you're going to put their own army on them. Like, see, that's just, it's unbelievable that actually happened.
Yeah, okay. Mark, there's nothing officially planned at this point, but that doesn't rule anything out in terms of a similar type protest. There's just nothing organised at the moment, but it's not off the table, I take it.
No, well, myself and Joey talked there last night and there was different people and even the guards that said to us, no, is there anything planned for today and stuff? There's nothing planned. That protest was only planned within hours and we've seen what it was like. if it was a bit of planning put on there, I don't know what it would be like. You know, we didn't set out to block anybody or cause anybody any harm. We just wanted a few people to turn out and try and show the boys in Dublin that we're here to support them. And we would like the government to just sit down and go around the table and talk to the people. And we've given millions to every other country that was struggling. No, why not just help our own country to keep moving? All the other countries in Europe's helping their own people. They try and get through this the best we can. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay. Mark, thank you for that. And the Australians have the excise duty, not the actual price of fuel, but I take your point from earlier. Rebecca, just before I take another break, you know, you're a Donegal man, sort of dragged out of Donegal and now spend 3 or 4 days a week at least in Dublin when the Dáil is sitting. Charles, what have you observed in terms of the connection between the seats of power, I suppose the seats of the journalists' chairs, and the reality of the island of Ireland? You're muted, I think, Charles, or else you've gone very softly spoken. No, you're not muted. I've got your fader down. Carry on.
Oh, sorry.
That's us equal now, Rebecca.
No, Greg. So basically, yeah, I can see. Look, listen, there's a divide there. There's a Dublin bubble, and where basically, particularly in Donegal, we're geographically isolated. And, you know, when it becomes the... I would say between what I've seen this week regarding this protest and the way that these protesters have been treated by the media and government ministers turning around and saying elements of our far right, divide and conquer is what they're trying to do here. And I think that particularly with what's going on in Donegal, there's a, you know, it's because we're so far away to think we're at the end of the world. We're just literally hours away. I can jump in my car and be in Dublin in 4 hours. But the difference is, Cork is, you can jump in your car and go down the motorway, be in Cork in 2.5 hours from Donegal. We don't have the infrastructure and the investment. And they keep on going on about, like, you know, what we're putting in. It's equal. Well, all we're asking for is parity. And Donegal has been vastly underinvested in, to the point now where we've had real emergency situations regarding the hospital and moving forward just to get on that. And we could see what was going to go happen with the hospital if people didn't stand up and fight and protest, that the hospital would more likely been downgraded, but we wouldn't allow it. And this is the way it's got to be moving forward, because Donegal needs to start, and people need to remember when they're voting for these government parties, that these government parties need to invest in Donegal. And we need to see what that looks like, because right now we're not seeing it at all. We're seeing underinvestment. We're seeing...
Yeah, but there's no guarantee whoever was in government in Donegal would, but you see,
the difference is like this. The lowest, the smallest disposable income in Ireland is in and around Donegal. Over the last 21 days, we've seen 1,000 litres of oil go up 700 euros. How can any family and do this?
Well, they don't.
Survive?
Well, people are sitting with empty tanks. It's the second lowest at the moment. Not splitting hairs with you, just you know yourself. Yeah, the second lowest.
We're in trouble up here. Well, we need investment.
I get you. Paddy, there is an out here. You know, I mean, we've seen on the global stage that sometimes you just have to say, right, you know what? I'm going to have to swallow this bitter pill or whatever it might be. I think the government needs to, if I were advising them, and I don't know how it's done, needs to strike a cap, because I think they can do so with a bit of certainty. Now, I don't think we're going to see oil go to 150 a barrel or what have you. They could cap diesel at maybe 2, you know, petrol at, you know, 175, green diesel at 120 or something. I don't know the exact numbers, but they're going to have to do something, aren't they?
It's inevitable that they're going to have to do something, because if they don't and the blockade doesn't dissipate, we'll be in an absolute chaos very, very soon, because a lot of petrol forecourts around the country are actually running out of fuel, so there's going to be no problem there. However, there's one little stinger in the middle of this. One of the strange things about the future, Greg, is that we can't predict what it's going to be. And we're in this predicament now because of the war in Iran primarily, and God himself only knows now how that's going to settle down or not, because if that ceasefire was to break down, And we're back to, you know, the blockade and the fuel in the Straits of Hormuz, not in Ireland or whatever. You know, the price of oil could go. There would be no ceiling at all on the price of oil.
But that's why you time the Australian.
There wouldn't be an issue about the price of it. There would be an issue about the availability.
I know, but that but you cross that bridge when you come to it, do you not? Because even in the Australian example or the Spanish example, they have put a timeline on it, and you hope, right? You say, right, let's get through the summer and hope common sense prevails. Because if it's if the Middle East isn't sorted, we're in a global crisis
it's,
like
it's
we've never.
It's inevitable that that's going to be have to be the outcome here, Greg. Because all I have is a simple diesel car. I don't have a 75 horsepower tractor or a big truck or something like that. And I know what happened to the price. The litre of diesel, it went up from 169 to it's touching 219. It's probably more than that today. If transport was the main source of my income to support my family, I just wouldn't be able to do it because the rise is too great. This has to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think the government can do it because what's going to happen here too is that, you know, the Irish people are sort of well-behaved and, you know, primarily, most of the time anyway, they adhere to the law. But this the law of unintended consequences here, Greg, is that there could be a major fracture in society as a result of this and a mistrust in government and a disengagement in government. And I think there's a responsibility in government to try and put this back into a box very, very soon and put a ribbon around it. And I'm afraid that's the only way that they're going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
We're coming into the season now, by the way, where agriculture, we can't move around here now, neck of the woods outside of Letterkenny for heavy agricultural machinery. They're out ploughing and spreading fertilisers, soon be cutting silage and all that. They're going to need fuel to do that.
I know, and the margins.
That's our food, remember,
yeah.
in at Christmas time that the guys are working on today.
Yeah, and
Greg,
yes, Rebecca.
Do you mind if I just say that?
No, of course
I heard from one of the bus companies there last night that 25,000 is euros is how much their fuel bill had gone up in the 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is detrimental to businesses like that. They're using massive fuel. So if you think on the amount of money the government is making and the revenue from that one bus person alone,
yes,
you know, you have all of the other industries around that use the fuel as well as ourselves on the road every day. They're gaining massive money
on
that.
Well, I don't understand those. The government really has the headroom in this. You know, it really has the ability.
If the will was there,
you know, people can talk about 45 million being sent to Ukraine. That's chicken feed. There's a ton of headroom here if the government wanted to put something in place for 3 months.
Yeah, exactly, Greg. I would agree with that. Give it 3 months and then review it. And what that would do, that would give people time to plan. What's happening right now is businesses are absolutely in dire straits here. There's people going out of business. That they're actually, some of them protesters are up there. You can hear it saying, like, they're basically days away. They cannot afford the fuel bill. And what's going to be happening is debt collectors will be coming to them and their businesses are gone. And that, give them time. Give them that space. Give them 3 months. Like, we can absorb this. We can send 90 million euro to Ukraine. Let's make sure that we look after our farmers.
I understand where you're coming from. And as much as I don't want to group in the far right with regular protesters, I don't want to group in our problems with little amounts of money that we're sending to Ukraine either. Because the truth is we put away 1.6 billion euro in the future fund in the first 3 months of this year. You know, 90 million goes into 1.6 billion a lot of times. My point is that if we want to, we can still maintain, whether people like it or not, those international responsibilities. But there's a ton of money here that could be used to address this issue too. It's not, you know, the people of Ukraine's fault either. Ironically, their petrol's only €1.40 per litre, by the way.
Do you mind if I make a quick point here and go back, and I'll make it very, very briefly? I think it's very lazy and very easy to accept the fact that we have a Dublin-centric government here. We have 9 members of the Oireachtas from Donegal, your good self, Charles, and I'm counting Eileen Flynn on this. And we've had 3 government ministers from this constituency in the last 25 years. And all the TDs and senators we have from Dublin all the way down to Kerry. Most of the civil service and senior echelons of the civil service come from the west of Ireland anyway. And a lot of the people in Dublin, they actually holiday in the west of Ireland. I think it's far too easy and far too lazy to say that it's all Can I say something at the risk of the West of Ireland? Actions may support that.
Yes, but Paddy, I've observed too often, and you know, Charles can say he's not one of these, and I accept he's not. There's something happens when you get elected, even if you're from the west of the country or the northwest or wherever, whereby something changes. And 6 months or a year down the line, you get subsumed into that bubble.
You do, because you get brought into committees and, well, Charles can speak.
You just become part. Yeah. You just become part. You become part of it. You've got your office. Yeah. You've got your secretary. You've got your allowances. Yeah. You've got your this. You've got the that. You've got a better understanding of how tough it is to make a difference. You've got a better understanding of how the civil service runs the And very quickly, the most strongest rebellious voices, all of a sudden, they just blend into the white noise.
Like, yeah, well, let me just tell you about that there. So you have people who we, as defective concrete homeowners, have always looked at, and you look at the Danny Healy Rays and Michael Healy Ray, who stood up and said, everybody's castle, every person's home is their castle, and now silence. Now, I understand what you're saying there, because when you go up there, particularly for myself, who wasn't a politician, who's been elected, and you go up there and you can see you could get swallowed up there. But the fact of the matter is, and it's about what you are and who you stand for, okay? It's about being home. It's about being in Donegal. Dublin, I can go up there and fight in Dublin, which I do, but it's also the most important thing for me as a politician is being here, helping people all the time. And where you see there's people in political parties who will toe the party line. I always say this, the people always come before the party. Parties do not matter.
Yeah, of course they don't. But I mean, I'm not saying this is the case with you, but I mean, then you independents go up and they form alliances, and then, you know, whoever's the strongest voice in that alliance becomes a de facto leader of a party that's not a party. And, you know, like, do you stand up at the back benches? Are you disruptive enough screaming about Donegal, about the hospital, about Garda numbers? You know, when was the last time Garda numbers were raised up there? I hear you, don't get me wrong, and I hear you, but my point is that, like, are you up there kicking up enough of the stink?
I am up there kicking up enough of the stink. Well, look, listen, if you look at Sinn Féin's last motion there regarding fuel prices and all that, okay, the devil's in the detail. I stood up in a forecourt for an hour and a half and done a survey, right? Got exactly what's going on and said to them, the average family in Donegal is paying an extra €1,000 compared to what they were 17 days ago. How are they meant to do that? Everybody looks at me that are not from a rural area and think, well, you know, we're all right, Jack, we can carry on. You know, because all they need to do is go in and flick a button on and their gas-fired central heating will come on. Where in Donegal, 85% of the homes rely on kerosene. And they've seen the price of kerosene go up over €800 in the last month. How are we meant to manage with that?
Okay.
And that's why I'm there. I'm up there to take it to them.
Understood. Deputy Charles Ward, 100% redress. Thank you very much for joining us. It has been a pleasure. Rebecca McDade, thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time, Rebecca. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. And lastly, but not least, Paddy, thank you for joining us. Look after yourself.
Thank you, Greg. You're very welcome. Thank you.
Always enjoy your insights. We had a really very busy hour, and I did neglect an ad break. So we are going to take one final break before the news at 10. I'm going to come back and catch up on as many of your comments as I can get through. And we have been inundated. This is one of the most important issues, certainly, that I've covered since I've been sitting in this chair in one form or other. People are very, very vexed. People are very angry. People are very moved. And even if people are discommoded by the protests, fundamentally they still agree with them. That's the overwhelming message we're getting. I'm not sure if it's Donegal Northwest exclusive. But anyway, I'll reflect that and get a sense of that after we take a break for the news.
They say time equals money. So spend your money where you spend your time. No matter what your preference is, Cooney's Home Interiors has something to suit every taste and budget. With our extensive range of home furnishing to fit every room and style, from mattresses and beds to rugs, mirrors and suites of furniture. Visit us in-store today and see for yourself what Cooney's have to offer and let us help you make your dream home a reality. Cooney's Home Interiors, Letterkenny Retail Park. Huge range, great prices.
Life is full of moments when you need the right legal advice. Buying a home, resolving a dispute, or planning for the future. At Gibson & Associates LLP, we provide clear, straightforward guidance you can rely on every step of the way. Whether it's your home, your family, your business, or something unexpected, having the right legal support from a team you can trust makes all the difference. For professional legal advice across a range of services, visit gibsonandassociates.ie or call our Letterkenny office to arrange a consultation.
Genesis Clinic Gaydour, introducing Purisomes and Secret RF Microneedling, an advanced skin treatment that combines radiofrequency energy with microneedling to lift and tighten jowls and neck, minimise wrinkles and scars, and improve tone, texture, pigmentation and redness. Also offering PDO thread lifts, dermal fillers, skin boosters and laser treatments for hair, rosacea, acne, ageing and all skin conditions. Contact Mary Ferry, your aesthetic practitioner at Genesis Clinic Gaydour, 07495 32575.
Check out Super Value Carndonagh's Real Rewards Prices. Aldi Price Match on hundreds of products across the store. There's 3 for €30 on Pampers Nappies and Fairy Laundry and Dishwasher Range. 3 for €10 on Heinz, Hellmann's and Nestle Favourites. Make real savings every week at Doherty's Super Value Carndonagh.
At Eclipse Cinemas Bundoran and Liffordstrabane, Strabane, the stars shine brighter. This isn't just a trip to the movies, it's a VIP experience. Sit back in luxury.
Thank you so much to all of you who've been texting in. As I said just before the news, you know, the reaction to the fuel price crisis has been absolutely huge. Any idea what's wrong in Letterkenny, stuck in traffic? I don't know. If anyone out there can give us an insight, please get in touch and we'll pass it on to other listeners. It could just be Friday, Easter holidays or something along those lines as well. Maybe, I don't know. But if there's another reason, please let us know. Let's see. Sorry, there's just a few different comments sitting on the top of other comments. Hi, Greg. Nearly all service stations in Sligo Town are out of diesel this morning. Wow, okay. Time to vote these government parties out in local elections and national elections. It's only the way the message will get through. Vote them out. Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil have had it good for too long in Donegal, have not produced the goods, but who do you vote for instead? That's what people might have to consider. Do you see a viable alternative? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I don't know. Hi, Greg. Nearly all service stations in Sligo out of diesel this morning, says another listener. Greg, it's quite simple. The government has the power to up prices, but they also have the power to ease prices. All they need to do is bring the price down by 30 cents per litre and they'll still be getting 45 cents tax on fuel. This government gives everything to foreign nationals, but not the Irish people. It must be nice to be on Greg's salary as he doesn't need to worry about heating his home. It's diabolical. I'd love to know what you mean by that. With all due respect to you, you have no understanding of my situation or my salary for that matter. Perhaps maybe you look at the salaries that the people in RTE or News Talk get and you think, well, Greg must be on that. I just work in the community. I live in the community. I'm a normal person and I don't... I'll tell you. I don't know. We managed to put in 250 litres of oil the last time. If you want to know, if you're interested, there you go, right? Not 500, not 750, not a full tank. We managed to get to 250 in the hope of scraping through summer on the oil in the hope that prices will come down, all right? These protesters are standing up for everyone in Ireland. These fuel hikes don't just affect farmers. It's everyone in Ireland. I don't know why you're having a go at me. You know, like what... So if you've listened to the programme at all, I really, really... I don't care if you do, by the way, but I don't know why you're having a go at me. It makes very little sense. But anyway, I am big enough and ugly enough to take it, as my mother used to say. Well done to everyone protesting, Greg. The people of Ireland have spoken. The government needs to listen for once. On Taoiseach and the government say they can only talk to the representative bodies in this dispute. Well, how come at least 70% of these protesters are represented by the IRHA and the IFA, yet they feel they have to go out and protest? No different to the teachers and the INTO who want to protest as well. The government just the usual divide and conquer by way of their associations. Another morning, these protests are a long time coming. Enough is enough. Unfortunately, this is the only way we can make Our disgraceful government listened to us. All we're looking for is a little bit of help, that's all. And turning on their own people, shocking to say the least, sickening. But wait till I tell you, we, they say, are not going away. Fair play to the people that are protesting. The Irish people have grew a set time. We got change in a lot of things. Now, another, we need to look at energy generation for the future of oil, or the oil will run out at some stage. Ireland needs to generate its own energy, nuclear, wind, solar, etc. We need to move away from oil as we will eventually run out. There is a lot of people that are of that view as well. But look, at the same time, we're a long, long way away from that. And people really, I suppose, have to live or feel they are trying to live in the here and the now. The current administration is so out of touch with the reality in Ireland, says a listener. They're swanning all over the world, handing out taxpayers' money by the millions. They should look after their own country first. This is another water protest moment, and credit must be given to the organisers for organising a peaceful protest. Another, what about the $661 million from the bottle return scheme lifted in 2024 that people haven't collected? Why not put that to the cost of fuel and reduce the price? It would go a long way. Another, the government will be quite happy to wait until the people start turning on themselves, delay helping and blame others rather than trying to help the Irish people who are struggling to survive. Another, good man Charles Ward, very well spoken. The army should not be called in to this protest. The government have taken too much tax from fuel time. They've given some of it back to the people. I do sympathise with, say, soldiers who have their own fights for... they have their own fights for... you know, proper pay, proper conditions, being well looked after, etc. And then for them to be effectively asked then to go out and protest, or not protest, to sort of go against their neighbours effectively who are protesting. It's a big ask for them. It's so obvious to anyone who cares, says another, to actually open their eyes. They don't want an organic ground roots protest taking place. So they are trying to tarnish movement like they did before. The people know their game plan, not going to happen. Another, when they are looking for votes, they will address the people. Would appear the government are pushing the far-right involvement in process. They have learned from the French. People who began this are hard-working, honest people, who the far-right can be as well too, you know, by the way. They might have different points of view, but it doesn't mean that they don't have to pay their bills. And the same with the far-left. Politics is a horseshoe. You know, and people on the far left can be as extreme as the people in the far right. But they say people who began this are hardworking, honest people, quite sure some in the far right will probably have got involved for their own reasons. But government, on a cynical campaign to discredit this group of ordinary people, this is not representing the people. Another, there's currently over €75,000 in a GoFundMe page for the protesters. This is what I don't like. I never saw that, to be honest with you. Not that it really is a bad thing. I mean, they have to sort of have toilets and food and all that kind of stuff, don't they? These groups don't want outsiders at their meetings because it makes them less important. Remember, most of these groups all have paid members with CEOs on big wages and doing as the government tell them for funding, as opposed to what the people want. Another, 3 points on recent events on the fuel issues. It's very worrying when politicians think they have the right to decide what type of peaceful protest is right or is wrong. Two, the buzz phrase of far right is bandied about like confetti at a wedding to undermine anything that politicians don't agree with. And three, it's all well and good to blame the USA and the high tax in regard to the current price of fuel, but let's not be too naive to ignore the price gouging that's adding to the problem. I suppose we've had an opportunity to look at this in quite some detail. The level of price gouging, I'm not really quite sure. Certainly not on the forecourt, I don't think. Right, let's get to this week's podcast. And it's 40 years since a tragic fire in Letterkenny, which cost the lives of four young people and indeed their babysitter. It was an awful, awful tragedy. And there's a special series, a special event coming up later this month to mark it. It's in the cathedral with musical performances and a very special mass, etc. But Angela O'Donnell is the mum who lost four children on that fateful night. And I sat down with her this week for a chat about, I suppose the tragedy itself, how one could even deal with such loss and what keeps her going, and about how she coped and is coping and how fresh things can feel, even though so much time may have passed. And I sat down, as I say, with Angela and also Philip, who was one of three brothers who survived that fire that night. And they pick up the story discussing the events of the night in question.
It was organised chaos.
Yeah.
Well, we were downstairs.
Oh, well, that's the difference, isn't it?
You know,
me and the smoke rises.
They were, there was, the baby was in our room, and Sharon came in early morning and took the baby out. She took Kevin out into their room.
Yes.
So Joanne and Kevin and Adrian, and they were all in one room at the back of the house.
Right, okay.
And it was like, it started downstairs, but there was, if you can imagine, like a chimney breast and then two alcoves.
Yes.
And apparently that's the smoke went up.
Just followed through that path and straight in. Yeah.
Straight up. You know, it started in that end of the house.
It was.
But Patrick took Joseph out.
He did.
He was at life saving and down in the pool. And he realised if he got down below the smoke.
Patrick was only 8.
Yeah.
I mean, so what a presence of mind.
And Joseph was 5. Four or five, yeah.
And
Patrick realised if he got down, he could take Joseph out. And Joseph held on to his feet and they crawled out.
Mm.
Now, they were in a house across the road with Josie and Eileen Gallagher. We didn't even know they were there. We thought they were gone too at one stage. And then we realised, no, the two boys are okay.
I remember, you know, I remember... after some time, and I don't know whether it was 20 minutes or 2 hours or whatever, but I remember going over to Danny and Mary McGlynn's, and my mother was in the kitchen along with City and a whole load of ones around her trying to console her or whatever. My father was on the phone to, I think it was my grandfather.
Yeah.
You know, and I came in and he looked at me, and it was, things were bad.
Yeah.
Things were, and there was, there was no light.
Yeah,
there,
I know what you mean,
there were
yeah.
very little light, and he said to me, he says, what's happening? And I said, I don't know. And he says, you know, and who's out? And I said, Paddy's and Josie and Eileen Gallagher's along with Jojo.
Mm.
And the whole expression on his face changed.
Yeah.
Because there now was hope that maybe there was somebody else out.
Yeah.
Maybe there was somebody else. He said to me, get them. Go get them.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and as things, as that day unfolded, like it was amazing. Like, and as I say, I don't know whether it was an hour or 2 hours. I was still walking about in my bare feet. The madness of the whole thing. And I remember we were there, we were in McGlynn's for a while, and everybody started the day away.
You know, we went
City.
I've been friends with City and Sean Doherty for 50 years nearly. So City said, come on, you're all coming to my house. So that's where we were. We stayed with City and Sean for over a week at that time.
How soon were the funerals then?
Too soon.
Yeah,
I wouldn't recommend anybody to have bury a child as quick as we buried ours. That was Saturday morning.
It was the way.
That was.
So the fire was.
The funeral was Monday morning.
Wow.
And it was. Looking back now, anybody that loses a child, I do say to them,
why is keep that, it though, for a day. Angela, is it because the time that you can spend with them?
Well, we never got a chance to see them again, but maybe that, I don't know why that was at the time. I ended up in hospital, I think, on the Saturday, the Sunday evening,
yeah,
for a couple of hours. And then the funeral was, or did I get...
Whatever the time frame is, this tragedy happened early Saturday.
Yeah.
The kids were buried, and Noreen might have been buried soon thereafter. They were buried Monday.
Yeah.
If there was a hospital stay in there at all, it's a very narrow window.
Yeah.
Probably with no sleep or any way to sort of try and get your head around it.
No.
And we really appreciate Angela O'Donnell. Angela 90, as many of you would know, and her son, Philip, for calling in today. Calling in this week for that conversation. April 1986. It's the fire at the O'Donnell family home that changed the course of five lives and left a community in shock. They lost Sharon, Joanne, Adrian and baby Kevin. Philip survived. He was just 13 at the time. And reflects, as you've just heard, on escaping the blaze with his brother, Patrick and Joe, and how that moment shaped the men they become and how each of them deal with things in very different ways, such as human nature. There's full details of the mass and music that's coming up in the cathedral later this month to mark... to mark 40 years since that tragedy. Lovely, lovely people who've gone through so much. And there's an interesting part of that conversation, which I'm not sure you're aware, and just to give you a heads up. And Angela, prior to that fire, had been complaining or concerned about water, access to water in the case of an emergency prior to the fire. Many of you may be aware, some of you will not. And that's a problem that still is a concern today, because following a fire... a couple of years ago, Philip came on and talked about the fact that we're still talking about access to water for the emergency services when they're needed. And I know Angela has a great concern about the infrastructure that's in there. If, you know, God forbid, if anything happened in a school or a hospital or a house for that matter, that if you plug the pipe in, what's coming out? Is it water? Is it a good supply? Is it good pressure? Is there any dirt in it? You know, etc. So it's 40 years on, but there are still lessons to be learned from that awful tragedy. That's the latest episode of the Greg Hughes podcast, and it's available for you on our website at 11 a.m. this morning for you to listen whenever you want. It's also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well, so give it a like and a subscribe. So thank you very much again to Angela and Philip, two great people. Ryan McFadden's having a bit of a tantrum on YouTube about me. Greg, you're a big traitor. You're an idiot. Greg, we're listening to your programmes and you're the biggest traitor in Donegal. That's not a politician. Thank you. I appreciate it. I don't agree with it, but I do appreciate it. And I do appreciate you watching as well, or listening, or however you do. And I do respect your point of view. And you know what? Maybe you're right. Hundreds and hundreds of comments are coming in relation to the fuel protests. Never seen anything like it. Very rarely. I have seen stuff like it, but very, very rarely. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin's Son, McLaughlin Gunn, Solicitors Letterkenny and Remelton. We're going to take your legal questions in a moment. But Seamus, interesting to get your views, because I know you watch very closely everything that's going on in terms of, you know, the current affairs, if I could put it to you like that. Your reflections on what's happening at the moment.
Yeah. It's unreal the way this has taken flight. There was a comment very early in the week by one of the organisers saying, let's shake up the government. And that really has rung true by we see the masses that are assembling in these various different hot spots in the country. And the level of disruption cannot be underestimated. So it's a very difficult situation, because from a law and order point of view, which is really trying to assess it and seeing, well, is there a balance? And there has to be a balance between allowing people to have lawful protests, which is one of our, you know, constitutional rights. Everyone wants to say free assembly. And of course, that has to be protected. And against that, then you have a balancing act. Well, you have to say, well, people have to be allowed to go about their business, you know, so, and people have to be allowed to get to work. and you can't be parking and disrupting traffic. And the law enforcement agencies have to try to steer a path between both these competing rights and all the parties that are involved in it. Like, if you were taking sort of the heavy hand of the law to it, you'd say, well, there's certainly ammunition there to suggest that there could be breaches of the Public Order Act for willful obstruction of the highways and getting in and out of the city and getting in and out of forecourts. That is, in fact, a public order offence, and you could be issued with fixed charge penalty notice for that. That has been mooted. But is that really the way to go? There's talk about dialogue today, who's involved, who's not involved. There's a lot of tinkering around that. Not overly constructive, I think. I think you have to get all the parties in a room here and see what can be done. But what is the contradiction in terms, really, Greg, as I see it, is there's not an oil shortage as such. It's that we can't get it out to the forecourts. And that is unparalleled, I think. Like, before, we had fuel crisis where maybe we couldn't get fuel. But here, the fuel is in the country. And in fact, it can't now be landed in the country because the tanks are already full because they haven't been moved on. So it's a very difficult situation because the momentum that it has gained, and it is apolitical as such, and continues to gain, and the public support behind it, I mean, that is, to me, somewhat unprecedented as well. You know, we've had before marches on the Dáil, we've had the IFA, the Farmers Association, and that arriving in Dublin en masse and causing disruption in the past. This has now gone on we're going into 3 days, coming into the weekend. And then flip it over and say, well, look at the people who are being disrupted. Look at the small businesses that, you know, are already down, maybe retailers, maybe restaurateurs and that, and they're cut off from their clientele completely. And where's the justification for that?
But if the point being, though, if that something isn't done, all of that goes anyway. I mean, listen, the restaurants can't put food on the table if the farmers go out of business because they can't afford the fertilizer and the diesel. You know, the outcome effectively could be the same, whatever the situation. You know, I think people are prepared to take the hit on this, and some might say it's easy for me to say, for the greater good, that this is the breaking point.
Well, that's the way it's been teed up, Greg. There's no doubt about that. It's going to happen. It'll kill the businesses anyway because of the type of prices that are out there at present. But then look at how do you go about tackling this? I mean, they want to cap fuel prices and they want to remove the carbon tax. I think they're the two main points, and they're not going to move until they get some concession on that. There has been some very small concessions on it. I fully agree. I think the cost of fuel is too high. I think there is too much tax on it. I think we're one of the dearest in the EU on that. Yeah. And you can do comparisons right across, and it's difficult to justify that. And that's really where I think the government have to look at and say, well, let's at least come on a par with other European countries in relation to price. Mm. If we're still above those, we find it's very, very difficult to justify.
Mm. But you have to dig a bit deeper into this and understand it. Not you, Seamus, us as a nation. We have been set climate targets based on our GDP. Our GDP is driven primarily, to a great extent, by corporation tax, which we're told not to rely on because it could go at any stage. So our climate target is way, 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 way higher than other countries of similar sizes. So that's a disadvantage. We're paying higher carbon taxes based on a GDP that we're told we shouldn't really rely on. Secondly, if that target was not high enough, the government took a decision to actually increase our targets above the already inflated target that was already there. So much of this is of our own doing, and much of this is because it's been based on corporation tax receipts that we're told we should never rely on in the first place. So that's how the people of Ireland are being disadvantaged compared to equally sized nations. Why can't, for a period of time, it doesn't absolve us of our responsibility to the planet, albeit whilst the world's burning elsewhere, why can't they cap diesel at 190, petrol at 170, agricultural diesel at 120 for 3 months. And whether it's through rebates or from carbon tax or general taxation, we've got that rainy day fund, which we can continue to contribute to.
it makes life affordable, it makes this go away, and it makes the government look like they're doing something because they are doing something. And that's it. I don't want to simplify it, but
well, yeah,
is that not the solution?
Well, it certainly might be part of the solution. Will it solve this issue? I have some doubts about that.
I think if you get diesel under 2, you get petrol a little closer to 150, and you get agricultural diesel down from the 180, 190 where it's at now, to give farmers a break coming into, because the government can't do much about fertilizer. No one's talked about that yet anyway. You know, home heating oil, you can probably park that because we're heading into milder weather, so there's an out there and they're lucky. I don't think people want the sun, the moon and the stars, but I think if you got, I think €2 is a ceiling for diesel, and maybe like 170 for petrol, and take 60, 65 cent off agricultural diesel, and the money's there for it.
Well, it's still probably far too dear at 2 diesel in comparison to EU levels. It's still way above EU levels. And the point that I make is that we have to get back to that. You're mentioning our GDP, and that's fair enough. And that's driven, yes, by our corporation tax levels. But that's an argument to be made in isolation in Europe. That, like, if we are having proper representation there, there should be a positive argument being put forward that this is not reflective of the GDP of the country, and therefore reducing that accordingly. Mm. And that has never even been put out there as far as I'm concerned. But
the only person I've ever heard talking about that is me, and I hope I'm not wrong.
In relation to prices, like green diesel, I believe, was less than 90 cents. It's now up to nearly 150. So that's a huge element of it, and I think that is the element that has to be actually tackled, because that's what we're relying on for getting the supermarkets and the stuff on the shelves and getting all the goods to market, so to speak. And that is a big problem, because what is it going to cost? The last thing I heard on that was sometime last night, it was suggested that already with the small little few cent that took off it, it's costing a billion a quarter at the moment. And if they go for what they're looking for and cap it, it's going to cost €1 billion a month to the exchequer. So obviously do the maths on that and then say, can we actually afford that? So, but let's go back to where we are at now. We have a blockade in this country, and it's gaining momentum. It won't be too long until that's reversed. There is momentum with it now, but it can't stick there forever. So the solution and part of it, the capping of it, has to be tackled now. But there has to be a way going forward in relation to the likes of the carbon tax. And that is probably at a different level than protests and blockades outside forecourts. And also then, I think you still have to remember, you have to bring this home to all the services that are being seriously disrupted. And they haven't come out yet with a voice. But if this goes on into next week, I think that you can see the flip side and the momentum change in some way.
I'm not saying you're right or wrong. I wouldn't dare do that. But I think what you're saying there is what the government hopes happens and what their government believes happens. I think they are sitting there saying, if we can get through this weekend, the children are back at school, bish, bash, bosh. Me personally, I don't think that's how this is going to work. I think this is, the people are going to be inconvenienced. We know that we're all inconvenienced, but I think the public will think that this is for the greater good. But we shall see.
And finally, just on that though, and just for a second, think about this, Greg. We have all got good public representatives. We have a Dáil with 160 plus members in it. And they're meant to be representing the people of this country. And these arguments and this type of situation that is to be dealt with should really be dealt with at national level in the Dáil. What we have here now is an apolitical organisation gaining serious momentum. Mm. And it's bringing politics into question. And that's a slippery slope. And so just be guarded about that.
Yes, but I don't think people are too much interested in the government standing up on one side, the opposition standing up on the other, screaming at each other, watching a one-minute package on the 6-1 news, and then let's carry on until the next day. I think people are taking control of the situation now. It's very interesting, and it's very critical. Back with Seamus after the break. 086 60 25,000 is your WhatsApp or our WhatsApp and text number, 0749 125,000. We're in the company of Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and McLaughlin Gunn Solicitors Letterkenny and Remelton, and also online. We'll talk about that in a mo. But first, I want to get some questions, Seamus. I was left a house by my uncle. I cannot afford to put it into my name. Can I sell it on without it being put into my name? This comes up time and time again.
Well, yes, it does. It comes up in different varieties, Greg. And it's all, it's fairly topical because the caller has an apprehension, obviously, about not being able to put a dwelling house into their name, and it seems that they're a nephew or a niece of the deceased. So, firstly, I would say to you that that may not be the situation if they took maybe a wee bit of tax advice, and I'm not a tax advisor, and I never portray myself as such. But if the individual does not own another house, and this has been their home for 3 years before the death or thereabouts of the person who's passed away, and they continue to live on it for 6 years later, there would be an exemption that applies. Their threshold for tax is 40,000, and that's obviously quite low. I've often mentioned about them being up. They've only come up from 32.5 to 40. But there is an exemption there. That would be worth looking into. Now, if that is not the situation, and let's assume for the purpose of the question it's not, if they so wish and they want to sell, they do not have to put it into their own name. If it depends on whether they're the personal representative of the deceased or the executor, but the estate could sell it and they could obtain the benefit of the money as a personal representative of the deceased selling the property. So they don't have to go as far as that, but they will still, if it's a CAT situation on capital taxation, they still will have an inheritance as such, and therefore they'll be paying tax on the difference between their own threshold, which at the moment stands at 40,000, and the value they would get for the property after all expenses. And that's at 33%. But if it's a situation where they've never owned a home and they lived in this house and they're going to continue to live in it, there may be an exemption there. So that could be worth looking into, but they don't have to put it into their name to proceed to sell it.
Interesting. My dad before me and I have always taken sand from our local beach to bed our sheep. I was recently approached by the Guardian, told it's a special area of conservation and I have to stop doing this immediately. My question is, do I? If I've done this all my life, a farmer further up the beach has his area fenced off and says his land is his and I can take it from up there. Would his land also fall under this special area of conservation? I thought you couldn't remove beach from a sand, whether it was a special area of sand from a beach, whether it was a special area of conservation or not. But anyway, you give us the facts.
Yeah, that's no, I wouldn't disagree with you there, Greg. I tread very warily, regardless of traditions and everything else. The individual or the caller may get in touch with the National Parks and Wildlife Services, and I think that they come under the Housing and Local Government and Heritage Department, and it's worth checking that out, because if they look into it, a special area of conservation is just that, and it should not be interfered with or damaged or sand removed at all, and that is just the position on it. It's hard and fast, unless it was being removed for some particular purpose, maybe to manage sand dunes or something, which isn't the case here. It's been removed of it from the way the question reads for personal use. So I would be inclined to tread very warily. It's protected under EU. It'll be under the EU legislation. Now, you can obtain, if they go get in touch with the National Parks and Wildlife Services, they can obtain a map of the areas of special area of conservation, which might be helpful to them in identifying the particular property that is involved here. But regardless of the fact that they so has been doing this habitually, maybe for many years, they haven't really established any rights. The actual foreshore itself would be governed by the foreshore legislation back in the 1930s, and that would be under government control. So they certainly wouldn't have any rights to that. If they intend to fence off a piece of land, well, they do that, but they have to establish adverse possession. And again, that's likely to be challenged. So I think the removal of sand, it could be seen also as an it could be seen as a development under the Planning Act.
Yeah, and I don't want to be flippant, but I think they maybe think they're in the right of way territory. It feels to me a little bit like me texting in saying I've been driving without car tax for 10 years and I was stopped by a guard and said, you must tax your car. Can they do that? And as I say, I don't mean to be glib, but I think that seems to be the case.
It could be sort of different if you, just on that point, and I thought it's a good point to raise. If you're talking about an easement, the right of way, I don't think it's parallel to that, but I think where there is a slight overlap is where it could be considered or maybe argued like a turbary right, for example,
yes,
which is an easement to take peats off a bog, and that has been established, but that is attached to the land and is a specific easement over a particular area of land. So that is different and entirely different from a special area of conservation. So
okay.
I wouldn't buy into it.
Seamus, listen, thank you very much. The clock's against us. You can check out Seamus and his wonderful team physically in their offices in Letterkenny and Remelton. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn Solicitors. And I checked, you are online. I checked.
Good.
What's the address?
Keep checking out that spot, gun.ie.
Good luck to you.
We're there to help. Thank you. Right.
Thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time. Wow, I've not been defensive, but we spent the entire week talking about fuel protests, and I've spoken to so many people, farmers, hauliers, carers, all who've told their stories about how much pressure they're under with the price of fuel. But my word, some people just, I don't know if they like you or don't like you. Ryan McFadden's on the social slagging me off. We're listening to your programme and you're the biggest traitor in Donegal that's not a politician. He's also in the Northwest Fuel Protests group as well. That Greg Hughes show on Highland Ready is one of the biggest traitors in Donegal. And Kevin's in there as well. Kevin, I never thought I'd be in, to be honest with you, a Northwest protest group being slagged off so bad. You can tell by the way he's questioning the team. He'll read the government script for his 30 pieces of silver. Kevin, come on. I mean, what more do you want? But anyway, if people don't like you, they don't like you, and that's fine, and I don't care. But I mean, to be slagging me off in the group, the protest group, who we spoke to today, a member of that group today, to platform what they've done, and then to go, take the time to go onto social media as well. And I must really have peeved them off. But anyway, listen.
Turn the volume up now. Let's go. Could a Cube show on the radio? Shannon's on the screen. A brand new scene. Scanning what the internet has seen.
Oh, yeah.
Click, click, refresh. The feed is flying. All the viral trends were
we
now
we don't
supplying.
Have time for it all. But that is the intro to Shannon Wilkins' Scroll Patrol. I struggle with that, you know.
Wee tongue twister. It Scroll
wee,
Patrol.
It is a wee tongue twister. Right. Now, the drama movie.
So this is a new movie out in cinemas with Robert Pattinson and Zendaya, and a couple are about to get married, and over drinks one night they discuss the worst things they've ever done. And you'd think, you know, maybe like I stepped on a dog's tail or I stole an apple or something. The wife-to-be planned a school shooting.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So then the whole fallout after that of he's having doubts, will I marry this woman? Would she ever do a school shooting again? Right. The only reason she didn't go through with it because there was a school shooting the previous week and people in her school died and she became an emblem of gun violence.
I think that's oversharing really ahead of your wedding. Netflix, trust me, The False Prophet is good. It's good.
You haven't watched it. You tell me about this
yeah.
this morning.
I couldn't remember the name. Yeah, it's good. Good show. Four episodes. Shocking stuff, the stuff that goes on. But it's one of those shows where there's good access, good footage. It's not just talking heads and recreations, if you know what I mean, or recreations. I would recommend that for the weekend. It's tough. It's a tight watch, but it's well worth watching. Right, moving away from the TV for now, making your own butter.
So you're chatting about €3 for butter these
it's
days.
Expensive.
Real butter.
Yes, but it's so delicious.
Do you have any runners in your life?
You mean not shoes, obviously?
No, like people who go running.
Right, yeah.
So there's a trend recently where you
Does
get...
Chris Ashmore count?
Yeah, oh my God, we should get Chris to do it. You get a plastic bag, put cream in it, and because of the up and down jumping movements, the cream churns Grace and you get butter.
Yeah. I think when I die, do you know they bring stuff up? I think mine's going to have to be a tub of Dairy Gold because I just
oh,
eat too much.
Stuff.
Too much. Right, so don't waste that energy. Turn it into... turn it into butter. New Gen Z manosphere language.
So Joe Dex has actually been keeping me informed on this. Every time I speak to him, I kind of have to think what I'm saying. So looks maxing, have you heard that one?
Yes.
Yeah. So apparently there's also soft maxing. So that would be just keeping up with your hygiene.
Well, I know.
Making yourself more attractive. Hard maxing. This would involve cosmetic surgery or actually like
just to,
bashing at your bones to make yourself more attractive. And mogging is if you're more attractive than someone else. And then this
Who's mogging who in this conversation?
Who's mogging who? Don't know, Greg.
Tell the truth. Who do you think?
Who's
you mogging me?
I'm going to say, what is it? Age before beauty.
Listen, thanks, Shannon. We'll have more next week. We'll definitely make a little bit more time. Thank you so very much for coming in. That's Scroll Patrol with Shannon Wilkins. We're back with you Monday morning at 9 a.m.